With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Today's episode has been sponsored by Jay McLaughlin. Jay McLaughlin is a timeless lifestyle brand with incredible style and a spirit of connection. I am obsessed with Jay McLaughlin and have been so honored that they are sponsoring my Zibbyverse tour. It just so happens that the tour goes to so many communities and areas of the country that have Jay McLaughlin stores. And I love that the brand is philanthropic through Jay McLaughlin's
local and loyal programming.
Host store events to give back to organizations that are meaningful to Jay McLaughlin's local communities. I also love the fact that the clothes are just so chic. They make me feel polished and modern. And the best part is that most of the line comes in fabrics that don't wrinkle. I especially love the dresses, the cashmere sweaters, the other sweaters. You'll see them all over my Instagram. I typically tag at Jay McLaughlin. And so you can check it out. It is absolutely one of my favorite brands, and I am over the moon excited to be working with them. In fact, I want to share the love with all of you. Jay McLaughlin is giving 20% off new customers and listeners of my podcast with special code ZIBBY20. Capital ZIBBY 20. That's 20% off for new customers and listeners of the podcast with special code capital Z Zibby 20. Take advantage of it today. My favorites are this white open long cashmere sweater that I've been wearing on every flight that I've taken on this tour. I have a blue with light blue horizontal striped sweater, several dresses I even wore on Good Morning America. Check it out, Jay McLaughlin. Thanks so much.
Hi, I'm Zibby Owens, the creator and host of the award-winning podcast that you're listening to right now. Thank you so much, called Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. It is a daily podcast, 365 days a year, and each day we talk to an author about all of the things related to their career, their book, their life, and more in 30 minutes or less, because who has time? I am now an author myself, although I wasn't when I started this podcast, and you can get my new memoir, Bookends, a memoir of love, loss, and literature, wherever books are sold starting July 1st, and my children's book, Princess Charming. You can learn more about me at ZibbyOwens.com, but really, you're here to learn more about the authors, and that is what we're going to do. Also, be sure to check out all the other podcasts in the ZCast Podcast Network. You can learn more at ZCastNetwork.com, and definitely check out those shows as well. I hope you'll all check out the all-new Zibby Mag, ZIBBYMAG, the literary lifestyle destination with essays, book news, a lit lifestyle feature, and even some classes. Check it out, ZibbyMag.com. Tom Perrotta is the author of the novel Tracy Flick Can't Win, plus 9 other best-selling works of fiction, including Election and Little Children, both of which were made into critically acclaimed movies, one with Reese Witherspoon, and The Leftovers and Mrs. Fletcher, which were both adapted into HBO series. Oh, I watched Mrs. Fletcher too. He lives outside Boston. Welcome, Tom. Thank you so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss Tracy Flick Can't Win.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
This is the best cover because this is how I feel every single day, pretty much. This hunched over my desk, glasses on the side. You could be actually just taking a picture of where I am right now at the end of the day. So anyway. Okay. Tracy Flick Can't Win. Tell me, why did we go back to these characters? What happened? Tell me the whole story and tell listeners what this book is about.
Okay, well, Tracy Flick, if anyone knows the book or the film Election, was a very ambitious high school student who was running for president of her school, and her teacher was so resentful and annoyed by her that he actually tried to steal the election from her. And so that was a story that was kind of a political allegory that I wrote 25 years ago or so. And it was turned into a wonderful movie by Alexander Payne. It starred Reese Witherspoon. And as a result, I think of Reese's completely magnetic performance, Tracy Flick became a kind of cultural archetype. She embodied this idea of the unpleasantly ambitious young woman who is going to do whatever it takes to get to the top, which, by the way, is something that we admire in men, but I think found a little bit threatening in a young woman. And I had the weird experience as a writer of just watching this character turn into a kind of stereotype or a shorthand for this female ambition. And what was interesting was then it also, at a certain point, Tracy was seen as a villain early on. And then I think recently feminists sort of took a second look and said, wait a second, why is Tracy a villain? All she is a teenage girl who is trying to get elected president of her high school, get a scholarship so she can go to college because she's been raised by a single mom. She needs it. And, you know, yeah, she does a couple of dumb teenage things. She rips some posters for her opponent and then lies about it. But that's it. She's no villain. She's a teenager. So that was part of it, was just me watching this character become part of a larger cultural discussion about women and ambition. And then there was a second, more specific thing for me, which was that in the original book Election and in the film, Tracy has a sexual relationship with a teacher when she's in high school. And at the time in Election, the novel, she's very defiant about it. She says, I wanted it. We had this relationship. I realized it was not for me and I stopped it. And so she tells a story of her own agency. She was up for this relationship and then she realized it was a mistake. And then she broke up with the teacher and he was the one who acted immature and he got caught and he got fired. End of story. She's just going to continue on with her teenage life. She's going to get elected president. She's going to get that scholarship. And, you know, when the Me Too moment happened, I thought as a writer, I wondered if I had told the story in the right way, just because I noticed when I was reading Me Too stories, so many women talking about relationships just like this and saying, well, at the time, it seemed like something I wanted. But now that I look back, I understand that it's wrong. And in this new book, Tracy Flick Can't Win, Tracy is an assistant principal at a high school. She's still there as a high school principal. She knows it's wrong for a teacher to do this. And so she's having to confront this experience that she has crafted a narrative about. And now that narrative is starting to feel shaky, she says. And this whole book is about Tracy in middle age, taking inventory of her life and wondering why she hasn't lived up to her very powerful ambitions for herself and thinking about the way that the deck seems to be stacked against her. She's hitting a glass ceiling in her life and she's wondering, is it me or is it the world?
I feel like I know many people hitting that exact same thing. I feel like they'll be like prints of people's head, like hair stuff on all those glass ceilings, you know, from so many people popping up against the same place. Never mind, weird visual, but I think you know what I mean. Like,
I do.
It's a common place to bump up against at this time in our lives.
Yeah. And you know, we saw it in our political system. You know, Hillary Clinton seemed like she had everything that it would take to get elected. She had experience. She had the brain. She was a hard worker. She had paid her dues. She'd been a senator. And she did not win against a man who was, you know, lazy and inexperienced and unprepared, you know, worse than that. And the question was, you know, was she a bad candidate? Did people not like her? And that seemed to be part of this question of, you know, because that was also something about Tracy. She seemed very hard-edged and a little bit unfeminine, and the teacher resented her. And I think there was some question again of like, okay, was it just Hillary or is it any female candidate who can't win? And so yes, that glass ceiling affects you know, women at all phases of their career. I think it also is, as you say, a middle-aged thing. So even as a middle-aged man, there is that melancholy of just, I had this big dream and, you know, now I have a life that's somewhat smaller than that dream. And what do I make of that? How do I account for it? How do I find peace within myself?
Well, I feel like the more resigned you are to something like that, the less it just sets your, like it negates the potential of the rest of your life, right? Just because middle age comes, I feel so many people think, okay, well, this is what happened. I guess this is where I ended up, but there are decades left to live.
Yeah, I totally do. And I think that's where we find Tracy in this book. At the beginning, she is in that state of like, you know, my life is what it is. And then what happens is the principal job opens up at her school. And, you know, she's like, you know, Rocky coming back for one more fight. You know, it's like she is who she is because she is really resilient and tough, but also her ambition, that flame of her ambition has never been fully extinguished. And I think this novel is about somebody kind of coming out of a funk and sensing that there's another chapter to be told, as you just suggested.
If not now, when?
That's right.
Tell me about structuring this in a way with Vito Falcone's making amends for all of his past sins and how you have introducing all these characters by when he meets them to apologize.
Yeah, so this book did not start out as a book about Tracy Flick. Let me say that. It started out, I was writing about this high school Hall of Fame. And I didn't know Tracy was part of this high school, but the idea was that this high school invites a former football player back to town to induct him into the Hall of Fame and honor his teenage greatness. And this guy is also in his 40s, like Tracy. His name is Vito Falcone. He's a former NFL football player.
And but only for like 3 years, right?
Only, yeah, he had a very, very undistinguished career. But sadly, he's now a recovering alcoholic, and he is suffering from what he suspects might be some brain damage from concussions that he suffered on the field. And what I imagined was this story about a middle-aged man who comes back to his hometown to be honored, but really there's all these people in the town who have unfinished business with him, who resent him for the bad way that he treated them back when he was young and was this golden boy. Because it seemed to me like that's really like a great image of American masculinity right now. Like, you know, we had our golden years and now the culture's gone, hey, wait a second. We got some things to talk about. And I, you know, so Vito is somebody who's treated a lot of people badly in his life, like a lot of men who have power, right?
And even like the boy he left on the side of the road that was like heartbreaking as a coach. Oh my gosh.
I know. So right. So we catch him in that stage of making amends in a 12-step recovery program. And we just find out all the things that Vito has done to people. And so, yes, you mentioned there's a boy that a football player on his team who's young, and he refused to let him ride home on the bus because he had made a mistake on the field. And, you know, it can seem awful now, but coaches got away with murder when I was a kid. You know, that was a place, it was almost like a quasi-military place. And there was a kind of cruelty. It still happens, right? You still hear these stories about hazing and we, you know, there's just bad stuff happens in locker rooms, but not like it used to be just considered like, yeah, that happens. Mm-hmm. That's part of being a man, part of being an athlete. And I think, you know, the culture just is less tolerant of it now, which is great. And I think Vito is having to look back and literally say, I'm sorry to all these people who, I mean, it's almost funny. He treated people so badly. There's almost some humor in that. It's not funny if you're on the wrong end of it. It's funny to find out that he was so awful.
Yeah. Well, he's also like shooting himself in the foot over again
when he's apologizing, he's like apologizing for things that people didn't even know about, you know, like, and also my mom is still alive or my dad is still alive. But
yes.
Like, what? Get, you know, I'm getting off the boat. It's like, this guy, like, you just want to be like, no, stop. Like,
it's a Pandora's box for some people.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. As kids get older, some things about parenting can get easier. I mean, not many, but some. But others don't, like having conversations about money. Point is, kids won't really know how to manage their money unless they're actually in charge of it, and that is where Greenlight can help. Greenlight is a debit card and money app made for families. Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on their kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens build money confidence and lifelong financial literacy skills. With the Greenlight app, kids can learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely, thanks to games that teach money skills in a fun and accessible way. I got Greenlight debit cards for my kids. The greatest thing, you can actually add their photos that take up half the card. So when I handed the cards to the kids, they were like, this is so exciting. So they look great. Unfortunately, I only put the required 2 cents on at the beginning to make sure they worked. So the kids were like, well, what should I spend my 2 cents on? Anyway, millions of parents and kids are learning about money on Greenlight. It's the easy, convenient way for parents to raise financially smart kids and families to navigate life together. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/Zibby. That's greenlight.com/Zibby to try Greenlight for free. Greenlight.com/Zibby. Did you play sports? Did you play football growing up?
I did, yeah. So that, but I'm not very big. So my football career ended sophomore year when I realized that I was not going to be. I played quarterback and was captain of my freshman team. But then sophomore year, like, everybody grew and I stayed the same. And I couldn't see. And you know, I would try to tackle people. I'd hit them as hard as I could, and I'd end up just, you know, on the ground. I think I realized that I was physically not up to it. And it was kind of a, you know, a real moment of tribulation for me, because it's what I had dreamed about. And then my consolation was to sort of migrate into the artsy side of high school. I you know, tried to play guitar, but wasn't that good. But then I started to really get into reading. And when I started to write, I felt what I knew I didn't have with music, because I play with other musicians and they would be like, oh, it just goes like this, and they would do it. And it seemed like there was no obstacle between like what they were hearing and what they could play. Whereas for me, it was just all obstacle. But then when I wrote, I had that feeling of like, oh, I know how to do this. I stop here and I jump to there, and you know, this would be the way to end it. You know, just those things that seemed so mysterious to me in music, like I just couldn't follow it. When I wrote, I felt like, oh, I think I'm good at this. And that's a very powerful feeling when you're a young person, I think, to sense like, oh, okay, I'm good. And then, you know, then comes the real journey as a writer, which is you find out that talent is such a small part of it, and that you need so many other things. You need to read widely and deeply. You need to fail and be rejected and toughen up and find a voice that is particularly yours. But I do think it was, you know, it gave me the fuel to start that journey, this feeling that I could be good at this.
Basically, if you were 6'2", we would not be talking about this book.
I would be apologizing to you. Like Vito.
That's really funny. My husband, by the way, was the same thing. Quarterback, didn't grow enough and had to stop. And he actually went into tennis and then ended up like doing that professionally. But
oh wow. Well, that's a different kind of happy ending.
Yeah, different, but you know, but I guess with writing, you know, you could do it forever. You know, your knees are fine. You can do it as long as you want. And it's a better place to arrive at, honestly. So
yeah, well, I wish I were a better tennis player though. But yes, you're right. It is a really interesting thing, because writing can be a lifelong journey. And you know, I guess the question is, I just was reading this book by Jeff Dyer called The Final Days of Roger Federer. And it's just talking about, you know, that moment in everyone's life when, you know, you're trying to stave off the end. Mm-hmm. And he's sort of talking about that, like every book he thinks is going to be his last book. And that's what sort of motivates him to get through it. But then he has to immediately start another one so that he can have another last book that he's working on. Yes. But I do, you know, there are writers like Philip Roth and Alice Munro who are able to write, you know, well into their 70s, you know, and that is a, you know, as they get older, that's an inspiring vision.
I do think, though, that the aging athlete is something that the community at large, almost like veterans, like has sort of dropped the ball on, so to speak, right? We put so much emphasis on athletics. And, you know, I have four kids, I have two boys, and it's like from the mid, you know, it's like always boom, 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 like, what are they going to do? What's the next? And then people with talent, like, what happens then? Like when your life goes a different way, what are you equipped to do? How do you come off of that and all that attention? And, you know, even with the arts, right? If when you're performing, how do you then migrate into another life, especially if CTE plays into it also? I don't know. I just feel like there's no good, like, thank you for your years of service on entertaining the rest of us and playing. This is your life now. Good luck, right? Like, where is the welcome bag to part two?
Yeah, no, and I think, you know, so much of this book, Tracy Flickham, when is about getting older in a really competitive society. You know, I mean, Tracy is a competitor, and this book is about her, you know, finding a way to compete again in her 40s. But I do think there's also a critique underneath it of a society that is all about winning and is also about youth and promise and not so much about, you know, finding ways to age gracefully or finding ways to make peace with the fact that you're no longer competing. And so I think, you know, all these issues are related somehow, and they're part of, you know, the culture that we're in, which I think does make it's hard enough, you know, to get older and to feel, you know, that you're losing some of your physical abilities. But, you know, the culture also sort of says, well, you know, we're not even noticing you anymore.
Yeah. Sort of like the rise and fall of Francesca Diane's hopes. So I loved her, by the way. So you have Francesca Diane, who has this unrequited, well, I guess requited for a time, love, and keeps hoping for the principal to be able to officially leave. Well, it was, you know, you introduced this terrible illness. So of course she can't wish anything ill upon his wife, but of course she's longing for him all along the way and just waiting and waiting and waiting. And it's like, anyway, it's a little bit heartbreaking.
Yes. Well, so that's another story in this book. So it's told, Tracy Flickham is told as a kind of ensemble story set around this high school. And one of the characters, as you say, is Front Desk Diane. She's the person who greets you when you come to the main office, and everybody loves her in town. She's kind of a local celebrity because she's been doing the job forever, and she knows everyone, and she's always friendly and helpful. But she has a secret, which is that she has been once had a long-term affair with her principal, who's the guy who's about to retire. And, you know, this is another case of somebody who, is having to grapple with a huge disappointment in her life that she couldn't be with the man she loved and has to work beside him and also feel guilty about the fact that she had an affair with him, you know, rather than a sort of relationship on the up and up. And you know, I think that, that came, you know, partly I wrote the novel Election when I was younger, and I sort of poked fun at the people in the front office, the way you do when you're young and you are maybe not seeing the world with, you know, the eyes of somebody older and a little more compassionate. And I just felt like, I don't want to make a joke out of the school secretary. You know, I want to see the school secretary as a full human being. And that kind of guided me into that story. And she is a figure, I think, who I also had like enormous tenderness for, because it's, you know, she's, either people see her and know her, or they think they do, but they don't really see her and know her. And I think that's part of what fiction does. It gives us an opportunity to see people who, and kind of imagine their lives, people who we might just walk right past in the world. That just seems like a really important thing that fiction does.
You had this sort of sad moment of her hiding out from the whole community in the grocery store late at night, like finding the off time so she's not accosted at the store. But you never know. I mean, you could easily, it could have easily come from, you know, my going to the grocery today and seeing somebody and wondering, oh, I wonder what her story is. And then little do you know, she's like the linchpin of the whole community where she works. So I don't know. You just don't know. This obviously, this sounds ridiculous, but there's so much you don't know when people make all these snap judgments about people that they pass throughout the course of the day, and whether it's their profession or their longing or their love or all the things they've gone through or their addiction or whatever. Anyway, I think that's one of the greatest things that novels do is remind people to stop doing that, like that there's a whole story inside of everybody.
Yeah, you know, when I was a teacher, one of the things I would say is just write a story about the person who lives next door to you. Mm-hmm. Because that was something I realized at a certain point in my life, every time I lived next to somebody, it turned out they had some amazing story.
Yes.
And at first you're like, oh, what a coincidence. My neighbor has an amazing story. Well, no, it turns out everybody has an amazing story. And you just, you know, have to have the patience and the empathy to kind of listen to it or, you know, in some cases as a fiction writer to imagine it. But I do, you know, take that to heart as a writer that especially, you know, I don't write about, for the most part, about adventurers or, you know, people who are super powerful or wealthy. You know, I try to write about ordinary people and see their lives in a kind of full way.
When I was younger and I would get seated next to somebody at a dinner party or something like that, and I would have a bad conversation, and I would think to myself like, oh, okay, well, I got seated next to somebody so dull or so boring or whatever. And now that I'm this age, and maybe because I have conversations for a living somehow, I'm like, if I find that my conversation's boring, then I haven't done my job. Like, that's my fault, right? Then I haven't figured out the person, like, what is that person's story? Then, because it's always interesting. There's always something, right? So,
yes, though.
Not that there aren't, I mean,
there are boring people in the world. And I think they might have interesting stories, but I do think I have been at dinner parties and have tried. Yes. And sometimes you can't get past the surface of, you know, people are actively repelling you, maybe because they don't want to tell you their story, or they don't understand really what's interesting about them. I think that's possible sometimes. But I agree that if you could somehow get people to open up and tell you their story, that there is something there that's fascinating, but they don't always know what it is. And I might not know what my story is. You know, I think...
Tom, what is your story?
What is my story?
What makes you interesting? Tell me.
Well, that will be... I think sometimes a fiction writer... you know, I think... So I grew up in a very working class community. My parents didn't go to college. And it's been very important for me to try and write books that are accessible to a lot of different people. Like, I don't believe in a literary culture that only belongs to, you know, highly educated people. But I will also say, you know, my parents were much more culturally conservative than I was. And so I got used to kind of, you know, hiding aspects of myself from them. Not that there was anything particularly scandalous. It was just generational. And I think that fiction writing appealed to me because they're just these layers of masks that you can, so I could say to my parents, well, that's not me. That's, you know, that's a character I wrote. And so I do think there is some, and that's part of what is, I think, why fiction exists, right? Is that, you know, we can tell certain kinds of truths more easily if there's a layer of distance or, you know, plausible deniability. So for me, at least, I think I have never found a way to write a memoir or write honestly about myself. I think that this habit of sort of keeping my privacy has encouraged me to be a fiction writer. And I can range really widely as a fiction writer. I'm not one of those fiction writers who, you know, sticks really close to his own experience. But I do think there is some element that comes from growing up of like not being fully open, and that fiction is the only, I need that device to kind of tell my truths.
Interesting. See, who knew?
Who knew? Not me.
Well, thank you so much, Tom, for coming on. Thanks for reintroducing Tracy Flick, but mostly, I mean, not to disparage her in any way, but I just loved all the other characters and how many characters there were and how you just kept bouncing us from person to person and giving us so many different vantage points to keep it really interesting. And also, of course, continuing this fabulous character. So anyway, it was really fun chatting. And I look forward to hearing if your dinner party conversations are now spiced up. You can think of me.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. And thanks for having me. It was a real pleasure.
My pleasure. Congratulations. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens and at Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Also sign up for my newsletter at ZibbyOwens.com and sign up for my virtual book club and meet lots of authors on Zoom every other week. Thanks so much to Steve and Ryan at Texture Sound for the sound editing. And thank you to Morning Moon Productions for providing this fantastic intro and outro music.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.